So there was a big movement then to get general practitioners, GPs, skilled up in the mental health area to deal with this and become a primary point of contact and training them to know more. And I realised that really it's all about the public knowing things, because they're the ones that are going to initiate the action of going to see the GP and how they interact with each other and support each other and self-help things they use. And I realised, gee, this is a really big gap. So I talked to my colleagues when I was there at the Australian National University about that, and they all agreed, yes, it's a big gap. We didn't have any funding to do anything on it. And then we had talked to somebody who in the Australian Bureau of Statistics who was running a survey, and I said, whether we could get our questions into their survey. And they said, well, it'll cost you this amount of money. I said, look, we haven't got that. We've only got this amount. And they said, all right, we'll take it. We're going to do the survey anyway. So it was a miracle we got this work done. We did this survey, national survey, we call it Mental Health Literacy, and it got published in the Medical Journal of Australia. And that caused enormous interest. And it's one of the most cited papers ever in the Medical Journal of Australia. That really showed a big gap between the way mental health professionals thought about mental health problems and the way the public did. And so, you know, the professionals were advocating various treatments as being useful, and the public thought they were terrible, you know. So that sort of made me realise that how we needed to have like a whole of population approach to understanding about mental health problems. In physical healthcare, you know, you expect that people, like in Australia, people know. So, well, what could you do to reduce your risk of cancer? And I think the average citizen can list a whole lot of things you could do. And if you want to say, well, how do you reduce your risk of a cardiovascular disease? I think, again, there are a whole lot of things. So we take it for granted that people know what they can do, prevention. People often know, like if somebody is having a stroke, they might have some idea what you do, or they might know how to do CPR or something like that. So they know all these things, but in the mental health area, we never thought that was anything that the public should have anything to do with.
Yeah.
So that was, I think, the key insight there. Anyway, then I began interested, well, what are we going to do about it? You know, how do you educate millions of people about it to get them better informed and taking better action? And that's where my wife, Betty Kitchener, that's where it came in. We were, I went to a symposium once. It was a government run workshop. It's one of the things where you divide into little groups to discuss things and you write them on bits of paper. I usually hate those things. But anyway, there was a woman there called Meg Smith, who I knew as a student. She said something as a throwaway line. She said, oh, what we need is depression first aid. I remember she and I really fired off in the group. It was really good, quite stimulating. Anyway, Betty, my wife then, had by then trained in nursing, and she used to teach first aid for Red Cross. So that evening we were walking our dog, and when walking the dog, I said to her, look, Meg Smith had this idea of depression first aid. You teach Red Cross first aid, you know, why don't they deal with how to handle mental health problems? You know, could we do it? So we both got very excited about the idea, and we talked about it on and off over a couple of years, and we decided we were going to run a mental health first aid course. And it wasn't to do with either of our work. It was just like a community service activity. And our vision was maybe we'd run one or two courses a year in Canberra, the city where we live. That's all. Anyway, we just never got time to do it, but we used to go and talk about ideas, what you might have in it and how you might do it. And then it was in 2000, Betty then reduced her paid working hours and worked as a volunteer on it. And that really got it going when she worked as a volunteer. So she eventually got it going and ran some pilots, and then I worked on some evaluation with her, and it just grew in a way that neither of us would have expected. So obviously it was the right idea at the right time. Well, she's a great teacher. That's the thing. She's a great trainer. She can really connect with an audience. And she'd had the personal experience as well. And she's very evidence-based in everything. She's, you know, reads up on research. And the only thing we found a bit, you know, negative was only minor, I think. Some clinical psychologists felt this is their domain, the public shouldn't be doing these things. But other than that, people were really, really quite positive. And I think because we already had the first aid model in Australia, the idea that you could learn to help in physical health emergencies was around. And so linking into that model helped people with the idea. So it really spread. She was the only instructor. She was doing it all. She and I used to go and make first aid instructor kits in the evening and so on. We just did it all, mainly her, but I used to do stuff as well.
What would you put in the kits?
she'd have you know teaching notes and books that people would take away and things, and you know, it spread. She trained some other instructors then, and at first it went very well in rural areas in Australia, and I think because of the lack of services in rural areas and maybe the more community feeling people have responsibility for their community, it took on there before it did in the big cities, which is sort of quite interesting. And anyway, that just got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and you know, it went around Australia, and then it went to Scotland, was the first country overseas, and then it spread from country to country, and now it's in many countries, including the US. In Australia, we've trained, I think it's 3% of the population, which is you know, huge as a percent of the population, yeah. The United States has trained more people, but it's got a much bigger population. Australia's got the most as a percentage of population, but it just spread and spread and spread, and then, you know, other people sort of joined her working on it. We began to get interested in cultural adaptation, so we developed, you know, an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander version with Aboriginal instructors, and you know, we got one for Chinese-speaking Australians, Vietnamese-speaking Australians, and we got a youth one for adults helping young people, and then we got a teen one for adolescents helping their peers, and then an older person one that involves how to help people with dementia.